Good evening and welcome back to Sports Talk ATL. I am Chase Earl, joined by Alex Lord. Fantastic to be back after a week off, and we have a great show for you. We are going to discuss Trae Young and his injury. Has he played the last game with the Atlanta Hawks? We've got a ton of nuggets from spring training to talk about, but we are going to start off with a nugget from NFL insider Peter King, who announced his retirement from journalism, one of the best in the business, one of the best to ever do it. And he leaves us with a parting nugget. With the Bears, will they trade the number one overall pick? He says they will. Mike Florio said something like that as well. I haven't really heard anything else. I don't know. He says he knows nothing, but Peter King never doesn't know nothing. What do you think about this, Alex, or the Bears? Is there a possibility right here for the Falcons to move up in this draft if the Bears trade the number one overall pick?
I don't want to be a wet blanket, Chase. I want to be optimistic, but I don't see any way they choose Justin Fields and his contract over Caleb Williams and his contract. It boils down to something simple. Do you value Justin Fields going into the last year of his rookie contract before that fifth year option with potential draft picks to go along with that if you do trade the number one overall pick? Or do you want to reset your rookie quarterback contract with Caleb Williams? To me, it's a no-brainer. Peter King obviously plugged in. He said he doesn't know anything, but obviously, he's not coming from a place of, he doesn't know anything. He's heard some things. Yeah,
he knows something.
Yeah, so I am going to be cautiously optimistic and just play the hypothetical and go along with Peter King here for a second. And he doesn't have the Falcons moving all the way up to the number one overall pick. No, what he does is he has the Commanders trade up one. They get their pick of the litter being Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, Drake May, assumingly it is Caleb Williams. And then he has the Bears trading down again from the number two overall pick to the Falcons' eighth overall pick. The Bears come away with like three first rounders in 2025, four first rounders or second rounders in 2025, and a pair of second rounders in 2024. And the Falcons have the number two overall pick, seemingly for Drake May, is what I would assume. He's still number two there for me and a lot of other people's. Chase may disagree with Jaden Daniels, but the possibility seems to be open. Peter King does not say things to just say things, especially in his farewell column.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to take it somewhat seriously.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think. I mean, this is probably the biggest column of his life.
Yes.
Like, he is literally saying a farewell, and then he's leaving us with this nugget. So there's definitely something to this, and he's not the only one reporting it. And then if you just look at how the Bears have acted, I don't know. I mean, Justin Fields, they clearly covet him. It's shocking to me because I just think there's been so much inconsistency there. I know there's been some greatness. There's been some flashes. There's been some moments. I know he's dealt with different offensive coordinators. I know that he hasn't had the best talent around him, but at the same time, we talk about it all the time. It's a cheat code in the NFL. Yeah. And not only, maybe you don't prefer Caleb Williams. Maybe I'm not one of those guys who thinks Caleb Williams should be the slam dunk number one overall pick in this draft. I understand why he probably is going to be, because if he turns out to be the next Patrick Mahomes, you're the NFL GM and you passed over that guy. You look like an idiot. But at the same, in the same breath, you know, if he doesn't turn out to be that guy and you are the guy that took Drake May, all of a sudden you're the best GM in all of sports because no one else would have done that. So I don't necessarily understand. You have your pick of the litter. Go ahead and take him, whether it's Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Caleb Williams. It would still shock me. But as we say about Peter King, you know, you go back and look at the mock drafts that he does.
Yeah.
I mean, almost all of them are ludicrous and no one gets anything right. I think Peter King has nailed the Falcons' last three picks, Bijan Robinson, yep, Kyle Pitts, and Drake London. He's nailed it every single time. So he is by far, when it comes, yep, to this NFL draft stuff, the most plugged in guy. He leaves us with this nugget. If you're a Falcons fan, you have to feel a little bit more excited than you did yesterday, because as we said, if there's an opportunity for the Falcons to move up in the draft, right, they've got to take it. And listen, Chicago does dumb stuff all the time. So it's not going to shock me if they do something dumb. And this might not be dumb. I mean, the way that he said it, right? You get four first round picks, you get four second round picks over the next two drafts. And if you really believe in Justin Fields as a leader and stuff like that, building around him with all those resources, they've got a better roster than they did 2 years ago. You saw how they ended the season. They looked like a team that could be, yeah, a playoff contender even with Justin Fields. So it's not the wildest idea to me.
I don't think it's crazy either way, because the one thing has to be true. The Bears, it doesn't matter if they have Drake May, Caleb Williams, Justin Fields, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Joe Montana. If they continue to run their franchise like they have the past decade, whoever goes in there is going to fail. And the perfect example of that is this past year, nobody argued that C.J. Stroud should have been taken over Bryce Young. And now we're having all this revisionist history where, oh, Carolina made the dumb decision. No. The fact is that Carolina surrounded Bryce Young with absolute crap, gave him no help. Coaches were fighting about his development. His offensive line was porous. There was no weapons around him. Nobody could have succeeded in that system, including C.J. Stroud. So the fact of the matter is whatever the Bears do, if they don't surround that quarterback with better talent, and they're taking steps that way, the offensive line got better this past year. D.J. Moore, Cole Kmet, there are pieces in place. But the fact of the matter is, if it's Justin Fields, Caleb Williams, Drake May, they still have to continue to build that infrastructure around that quarterback. Whereas the Falcons, we can send a couple of first-round picks, and it would not hurt us that bad because the infrastructure is already in place. The offensive line, returning all five starters. Obviously, everybody knows about the young offensive core. Bijan, Kyle Pitts, Drake London. There's others there that, you know, Tyler Algier. Is Jonnu Smith going to be in the picture? The Falcons are in the perfect position to kind of get rid of some draft picks to solidify the quarterback position. So for the Falcons, it's a no-brainer. For the Bears, you have more to kind of consider.
Yeah, I mean, I think what a lot of people don't realize about quarterbacks is there's probably three of them in the entire league that can succeed no matter what.
Right.
And the rest of them, 80, 90% of these guys need the right pieces and places, whether it's the offensive. I mean, even if you go back to the Falcons and Matt Ryan, I mean, Matt Ryan needed the pieces in place, a good offensive line, good wide receivers, a Kyle Shanahan to really reach the peak of his game. That's how we're talking about that guy as a potential Hall of Famer. That is 95% of the quarterbacks in this league need the right pieces in place. I mean, go look at Russell Wilson. I mean, Russell Wilson was a guy that was a perennial MVP candidate in Seattle, and they didn't have a ton of weapons in Seattle or a great offensive line, but he had a situation where he was comfortable with. He knew the players. He had that rapport. He knew the coaching staff. He had an offensive coordinator that he was familiar with. And then he goes to Denver, and Sean Payton's a great offensive mind, but there wasn't the pieces in place and everything wasn't clicking. And all of a sudden the guy looks like a scrub that might be without a job. And we're talking about another future Hall of Famer. So there's not many guys that are going to succeed in this league without the proper pieces in place, from the coaching staff to the offense and everything else.
Yeah. Big picture, circumstances matter. Like, circumstances certainly matter. And I think, you know, vice versa, it can go a long way where, like, a team or a system is like the Falcons, who are begging for a good quarterback to come in. Vice versa, it works both ways, where the quarterback needs the system, the supporting cast, and the supporting cast certainly needs the quarterback. I mean, you look at the 49ers traded all those picks for Trey Lance, and they found a guy in Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, who was the answer. So like I said, you know, obviously Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heineke are not the answer for Atlanta. And I think that you would be foolish to think that, like, trading multiple first round picks and second round picks to go get your guy at the top of the draft. Oh, we need to keep building out the roster. We've been doing that. We've been doing that for the past few years, kicking the can down the road, kicking the inevitable, you know, we're going to go all in on a quarterback. We tried it with a third round pick and Desmond Ridder, a very high quality backup veteran in Taylor Heineke. It didn't work. The obvious choice now, if it's possible, is to mortgage several first-round picks so you can go get that franchise quarterback. Now, totally different avenue. If that doesn't come to fruition, kicking the can down the road, you know, not forcing the issue is certainly a possibility, and we're going to discuss it at some point in this offseason, that it is a reality Falcons fans should maybe wrap their heads around.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we've talked about Kirk Cousins. You talk about Russell Wilson. You talk about those stopgap options. You know, if it does go quarterback, those are realistic possibilities. Yeah. But this is why this is such a tantalizing nugget from Peter King, is because it opens up Pandora's box and the possibility that the Falcons could trade up. And when you look at the teams that are outside of the top three, the Falcons are in a prime position. They have the 8th overall pick. No one else between that 4 and 8 spot is really dead set on quarterback. Maybe the New York Giants. Obviously, we don't know how they see Daniel Jones. I imagine they're definitely going to be in the market for a quarterback, but the Falcons are in a prime position that if one of those picks become available, they can move up. And whether it's the 2nd or the 3rd or the 1st, like Peter King is suggesting, you have to go all in if you get the opportunity. And I think they will. They've made it very clear that they kind of want to do that.
Yep.
Coming up after the break, Trae Young, has he played his last game in a Hawks uniform? We're going to discuss it. The Atlanta Hawks announced yesterday that Trae Young will undergo surgery on his hand. He will be reevaluated in 4 weeks. Now, if you're looking at this reevaluated in 4 weeks, that means at the very least, I expect him to be out 6-7 weeks. And when you're looking at the rest of the season, that's about the entire season. I don't imagine the Hawks are going to push him very hard. They might not even be in a playoff spot when this is all said and done. I imagine if the Hawks do make the playoffs, the play-in tournament, Trae Young will probably push to play in those games. But it's very possible that we are either watching, we've already watched the last game that he's played in the Hawks, or we're only going to have a few more next, because if you ask Shams Charania, if you ask any of these NBA insiders, we've heard rumors, Jake Fisher, stuff like that, that they could be open to trading Trae Young. And it's something that we've talked about throughout this season. If I had to put odds on it, or ask you the odds on it, what are the odds that Trae Young is back in a Hawks uniform next year?
I don't know. It's really hard for me to put an exact number on it. If you have one in mind, go ahead. I'm just seeing it from a fan point of view, and I'm going to give you both sides of it. It's like heartbreaking that we're even having to talk about this, that Trae Young, other than Dominique Wilkins, is the greatest player to ever wear a Hawks uniform. Obviously, there's some old guys I don't want to disrespect, but in recent history, Trae Young's the greatest player to wear a Hawks uniform, and we're talking about completely wasting his career in Atlanta other than that magical 2021 Eastern Conference Finals run. And the fact is this is a conversation that is currently being had. I hope it's not in Atlanta's front office, because I personally don't want Trae Young to leave the city. The fact is, though, is what has this team done? Put yourself in Trae Young's shoes. What has this team done to show you that they're capable of putting a championship caliber roster together? Because I haven't seen it. Every move they've made has been disappointing, cost-cutting measures. The only one where I was really like, okay, they're going to go after it, was the DeJounte Murray deal, and they ended up, you know, overpaying against Travis Schlink's wishes. Schlink steps out. So, like, even the moves that were like, we're going for it, were made in jest of like, nah, not, we're not going to listen to our general manager. We're going to listen to the owner and then his 27-something-year-old son. If you're Trae Young, obviously Hawks fan, I want Trae Young here. I want to figure out how to do it with Trae Young. And I think he wants to do it. He wants to bring a championship to Atlanta. But the reality is, we all must face, it might not work out.
Yeah, I mean, Trae Young hasn't really made any suggestions or any trade requests, but at the same time, that very well could be on the way. He's definitely started to get asked questions about the trade rumors. I believe he was asked at the NBA All-Star game, and he said it's part of the game and stuff like that, but he wasn't necessarily shutting it down anymore. I feel like in the past there's been maybe questions or rumors where he's like, nah, I 100% want to play in Atlanta, and maybe that is changing. And if it is changing, it has every right to change, because this Hawks ownership group and this current front office have done nothing to help him out. They have not covered up defensive deficiencies. They've added another ball handling guard as their one big move. They've traded away pieces and cost cutting measures. They haven't done anything well. So if he does want to force his way out, he has every right to. And this is a league in the NBA where stars have so much control. He only has 2 years left of his contract before he has a player option, which he will almost certainly decline to pick up a bigger contract the next time out. So it is about that time where the Hawks are going to have to make that decision, and they're stuck between a rock and the hard place. Do you trade away or the best player or the second best player in franchise history if he demands a trade, or even if he doesn't demand a trade, for as much as you can get? Or do you try to build around him when you don't have a lot of room to maneuver? And it's just, I don't have any faith that they can do either of those things. So it's an unfortunate conversation to have. I think I speak for all Hawks fans. Everybody loves Trae Young.
Yep.
Everybody wants this guy to stay here. I don't think anyone, I know there's this narrative around the league that people try to push that it's Trae Young's fault. I don't think most Hawks fans, at least sane Hawks fans, believe that. I even saw some tweets after the Hawks win. Oh, maybe we are better with that. And listen, DeJounte Murray.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
DeJounte Murray is going to be better without Trae Young. And Trae Young's going to be better without DeJounte Murray. That's why the fit sucks. They're both really good players, but they're not better without Trae Young. I mean, let's be honest. They're 4-9 when he hasn't played this season.
Yeah,
I mean, Are they going to be the worst team in the NBA? No, they still have a couple of players. They're not going to be the Detroit Pistons, but they're not better. And frankly, they might still sneak in the playoff game with that play-in game without them. But you're talking about being the 10th best team in the Eastern Conference. Yeah. It's not that hard.
No, what are we talking about? This is an all-NBA guy. He's broken records, league records. I mean, this is absolutely asinine. I'm not even going to entertain that question. But this goes back to the questioning. And you know what I will say? I went to a couple of Hawks games recently. We ended up winning that Rockets game a couple of weeks ago. And I was talking to fans, having drinks, talking to people, and just trying to get a grasp of where a lot of Hawks fans' minds are at. And they're pointed at the right target. Most of them were talking about, it's the guys upstairs. It's not Trae Young. It's not Quinn Snyder. It's the guys upstairs. And I think that's where you should have your fingers pointing. It's questioning the top guys, the wrestlers, the Landry Fields of the world. And though we have to talk about potentially trading Trae Young, let's play out the scenario where we don't. And we do try and kind of build a team around him that can succeed. We have to go back before we can go forward. Because like Chase said, there's not a lot of wiggle room unless Tony Ressler suddenly becomes comfortable paying a luxury tax fee, which he has shown in the past not to be comfortable with. He's done everything in his power not to pay the luxury tax. So I don't know why we'd go forward assuming he would.
Even that, though, there's not enough wiggle room for them to get to where they need to go. Maybe there's enough wiggle room.
So they have to go back. Yeah, they have to go back to go forward. And are we sure that we're going to trust first-time GM Landry Fields and his assistant GM and Kyle Korver, who has never held a front office position, to get us there?
No, I don't trust them at all. And does Trae Young want to go back?
Like, yeah.
Why would he want to go back?
Yeah, so you're
like,
right.
If you're going to start blowing up this roster in the last couple years of his deals, there's no way he doesn't sit there and be like, hey, he wants you to push all the chips in, which you haven't done to this point. But at the same time, there's not a lot of reason to push the chips in, because unless they just somehow land a star player in the draft that like late in the draft, like in the 15th range or wherever they end up picking, I mean, there's just not a lot that they can do. Like, you feel good about Jalen Johnson. You feel good about Trae Young. There's not a ton more that you feel good. I like DeJounte Murray as a player, but the reality of the situation is this is not a good fit. It hasn't been a good fit for the start. We thought Quinn Snyder, we had a little bit of hope. Maybe Quinn Snyder can make the post. He's this offensive guru, and he has been in the past, but sometimes there are things that just aren't fixable. And this appears to be one of those things. The Hawks have regressed every single season since that Eastern Conference Finals run, and there's no signs that it's going to change. And if you try to go back, Trae Young's not going to want to be a part of it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, offensively, there's no issues. I mean, this team before the Trae Young injury is putting up historical offensive numbers. The issue is they're also, their defense is putting up historically bad numbers. So obviously, offense has not been an issue. It's always been the defense for most of the time. And that 2021 Eastern Conference Finals run, the defense was what really stepped up there late to help, you know, push that late season surge. Yeah. So
I don't know what happened for that like 2 month stretch. All of a sudden, the Hawks figured out how to play defense.
Solomon Hill, I'm telling you, Solomon Hill.
Yeah,
I mean, that guy.
We joked about it a lot when it was happening, but when you look back at it, I mean, just having a veteran like that, I really don't know what it was. I mean, for about 2 months there, they figured out how to play defense, and you look at the rest of the 4 years, they haven't played a lick of defense. Before that run, after the run, they haven't played defense. And this is a roster that lacks defenders. I mean, you're expecting them to play great defense. Well, Clint Capella's playing hobbled. He's really the only rim protector you have. I like Okongwu and his switchability. Not exactly a great rim protector. The wings, DeAndre Hunter hasn't developed into that really star defender that we hoped when we drafted him. You haven't gone out there and got defensive wings to help out Trae Young.
No, you got Bogey out there.
Yeah, I mean, if you got a lot of liabilities on defense, and you're expecting yourself to play defense, it's just... Shocker. You don't have defensive players and you can't play defense. And that's just kind of how the cookie crumbles. But very possible he played his last game in Atlanta. Coming up after the break, can Michael Harris become a superstar in 2024? The Braves are chock full of young stars, and none has a brighter future outside of maybe Ronald Acuna than Michael Harris II. For some reason, and this really bothers me when talking about the youngest stars in this game, when they talk about Julio Rodriguez, they talk about Corbin Carroll, and those guys are absolutely amazing. And I'm not taking anything away from them. I'm just saying that Michael Harris belongs in that, at the forefront of that conversation. Yeah. I mean, you go look at last year, you know, he has a knee injury, hyperextends his knee. He has a back injury. And then all of a sudden you're looking at him in June and he's struggled. He's been injured. He's hitting like 200. From June 7th on, you go look at his center field ranks. leaders in F4, leaders in OPS, leaders in OPS plus, leaders in batting average. He hit like 330 or whatever. He had an OPS over 900. He's playing gold glove defense. He's an all-star player right now, and he belongs in that same conversation as those guys. And they'll talk about those guys as potentially being the next Ronald Acuña. I don't think Harris will be the next Ronald Acuña, because I don't think anybody will be.
Yeah.
But he has the chance to be right up there competing for MVPs because he is a true five-tool athlete.
He is as physically talented as any player in baseball. I'm telling you that right now, including his own teammate, Ronald Acuña Jr. I got to look at him up close and personal. Northport, you see the merch. I saw it. It was beautiful down there, by the way. Michael Harris is so much bigger in person than he looks on TV. And I don't know if it was the offseason. I don't know what it is. But his baggy clothes, you don't really get a good idea of how big he is. He is a massive individual. And it's not like he's losing or sacrificing a bunch of movement or speed or anything like that. He covers two-thirds of the outfield and center field there. Like, his ability to continue, he's getting bigger without sacrificing that speed. It's mind-blowing. He's absolutely nutty when it comes to the athletic side of the game. And I've been talking about it for, you know, pretty much the entire offseason here. And you saw it with Ronald Acuña Jr. when the game started to slow down for him up here, that sixth tool, that mental side of the game. You saw what he did. He just broke records, became the first person to steal 70-plus bags, hit 40-plus home runs. Michael Harris is going to have a similar. I'm not saying he's going to go and be the guy that breaks Ronald Acuña's home run stolen bag record, but he's going to experience a similar leap where everybody just goes, where is it? He's always been there, and he has been there. I mean, what is he, 23 years old? He's got like a 130 WRC plus, plays gold glove center field defense at one of the most difficult positions to play it at. Andrew Jones says that guy's for real in center field. I mean, and then when he's so young, when he puts it together, it's going to be scary. It's going to be scary.
I mean, you go look, and I know it's ridiculous to talk about this after a guy who's 23 years old, but if you're talking about like Hall of Fame track records, like go look at the amount of players at 21 and 22 years old that have had as much success as Michael Harris. I mean, we're talking about a guy who really has put together two all-star seasons. He didn't make it the first year because he came up late. He didn't make it the second year because he was injured for the first 2 months of the season. Yeah. But if you look, and I always talk about this, if you put the all-star games and the nominations at the end of the year, Michael Harris is a two-time all-star coming off his age 22 season. I mean, the guy, and you talk about the game slowing down. You also talk about the confidence. I mean, he talked about it, I think, I can't recall the article that I drew this from, but he talked about how getting out of that hole and how much confidence that gave him going into the season. Matt Olson talks about it all the time. He's not a cocky kid, but he is a confident kid. He has to be. I mean, he walked into this situation after not playing AAA 2 years ago and came up and performed and got like five WAR in 114 games, had a 2020 season damn near.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy is – I just don't understand why he doesn't get – and I think it's just because
the reason why
he had a whole season.
I don't even think it's that. I think it's because he's the sixth or seventh best player in terms of most valuable WAR aspect on the Braves, whereas like Julio Rodriguez, Corbin Carroll, they're the best players on their respective teams. Where you put Michael Harris on, let's say, 27 other teams, he's a top three player, probably a top two player on that team. When you're with the Braves, the entire infield's all-stars. You got two all-stars on the – four all-stars now in the rotation. The entire outfield is dominated by the best player in baseball and Ronald Acuña Jr. Sometimes a guy like Michael Harris kind of goes under the radar, and he shouldn't. He absolutely shouldn't.
He shouldn't, but it also could work in his favor. I mean, there's absolutely no pressure for this guy to perform. I think we're going to see him more in the middle of the lineup. I know he's been fantastic at the ninth. I've seen him hit six. I think they might move him up to two against right-handed batters and maybe switch around Ozzie.
He deserves more at-bats. Yeah. I mean, it's clear.
I think we're looking at a guy in the future, and the future could be this year, that's a 30-30 guy or at least a 25-25 guy that wins multiple gold gloves and gives you five to seven WAR every single season. And like you said, he's the sixth best player on the Braves.
Yeah, and that guy's going to eventually start to earn MVP votes. And then at that point, you're talking Ronald Acuña Jr., Austin Riley, Matt Olson, and Michael Harris receiving top 10 MVP votes. Oh, yeah, and this little old guy named Ozzie Albies manning second base also garners MVP votes.
I mean, you're talking to a guy, the leader of the Michael Harris fan club, because I know you said that, but I actually had a ticket on Michael Harris winning the MVP. Yes, I did. I was like, you know, because that defense matters so much in these war calculations, and that's how it kind of gets determined. But I do believe he's going to garner MVP consideration in the near future. Coming up next, Nacho Alvarez. Can he replace Orlando Arcia as early as this year? When it comes to prospects for the Braves, there has been no shortage of surprises. And this year, my guy to look out for is Ignacio Nacho Alvarez, a shortstop prospect. And the biggest reason for that being is because when you look at this lineup on the field, under contract in the outfield, Jared Kelenic, Ronald Acuna, Michael Harris, all through at least 2028. In the infield, all through at least 2027. Outside of Orlando Arcia, which is really the one weak spot. You go look at Orlando Arcia last year, all-star in the first half, really good defensively, showing signs of becoming a consistent offensive player. The second half of the season, he was a below replacement level player and, frankly, you know, hamstringing the team. Ignacio Alvarez, 20 years old, great contact bat, going to begin the year in AA. I'm not saying he's going to make an impact very early in the season, but at the end of the season, if Orlando Arcia is not pulling his weight, Ignacio Alvarez progresses in AA, moves up to AAA. He'll be knocking on the door of the majors. And as we've seen time and time again, Alex Anthopoulos is not afraid to move these guys up if he feels that they can help the team.
No. Last year it was AJ Smith-Shawver. The year before it was Michael Harris. Alex Anthopoulos is not afraid to streamline a prospect if he feels, one, there is a need. Obviously, there does have to be a need. In those two instances, it was injuries. And, you know, as Braves fans know, injuries are inevitable. The teams dealt with them last year, next year, the year after. They're always going to be there. It's a part of the game. And let's just say, you know, even outside of the production side of things, like you're saying, that like Orlando Arcia, if he doesn't pull his weight and Nacho is just raking in the minor leagues, there's a real conversation that needs to be had about who can give the Braves the most right now as October approaches. But another scenario is if Orlando Arcia does in fact get hurt, we did see him get hurt there for a little bit. And Vaughn Grisham came in, struggled defensively. A similar scenario could certainly play out where Nacho starts in Mississippi, works his way up to Gwinnett. Orlando Arcia goes down. Nacho gets the call. Alex Alvarez wants to see what he has in this prospect. And the rest is history. I mean, AJ Smith-Shawver looks to be one of the future pieces of the rotation. Obviously, Michael Harris, we're all very high on Michael Harris. I think he's going to be MVP contender one day. The next guy up could be Nacho.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget about Spencer Strider in there. Oh, yeah. Don't think about Hurston Waldrop, who definitely can make his MLB debut. Now, I do not think this is, as I said, I don't think it's going to be a first half of the season thing. He hasn't even played in AA yet. We should temper our expectations. But, you know, there are certain guys that have made impressions around scouts, and Alvarez's defense has really improved at shortstop. It looks like he can play there. Yeah. We saw how important that was in the Vaughn Grissom, and that's the reason why.
It is the reason why
he's no longer with the organization, why Orlando Arcia is currently the starting shortstop. So if you believe Alvarez can be competent defensively at shortstop, there's a good chance he could be better offensively than Orlando Arcia, who is essentially an offensive zero for most of his entire career. Alvarez, that contact bat is very impressive. He slowed down at the end of last year, still hit almost like 280, hit above 280, hit 290 in high A realm. He's going to make a big jump at the AA level, but contact bats typically tend to move up well throughout the minors.
Yeah, and I think, you know, specifically for the Braves that feature power up and down the lineup, you know about the three at the top, Austin Riley, Matt Olson, and of course, Ronald Acuna Jr. If there is one thing that this lineup is missing, maybe it is a bit of that contact. And Jared Kelenic is not a contact guy. He's also going to come in here and rake home runs as well. So if there is one thing this Braves lineup is missing, it is a little bit of that contact. Obviously, Michael Harris, he's a career like 290 hitter. So we got some contact there, but you can never have too much. And for a position like shortstop, as you mentioned, the reason why Vaughn Grisham is no longer in the organization is he couldn't play defensively. And when you got a lineup as good as the Braves, if you're the shortstop, your number one priority, and then it's number one and the number two and three are way down, it's playing defense. So if Nacho's defense can translate, like you mentioned, and have that contact bat, there's a real possibility here that he's the long-term answer at that spot.
Yeah, and that's the great thing about this, because as I mentioned, there's not very many holes on this team when you're looking at the future. I wouldn't even consider Orlando Arcia a hole technically, but when you're talking about
a stopgap option, he's more than fine.
When you're talking about the long-term outlook of this team,
right,
Nacho Alvarez is probably, hopefully, going to be the starting shortstop of the future, and he's really the only position player the Braves have that's worth a damn or really shown something. He's been mentioned as a top 100 prospect, but I believe Baseball Prospectus already. FanGraphs just did a piece where they have a group of guys that they believe will be top 100 prospects next year. He was on this. So this is a guy that's really building up steam as a prospect, still just 20 years old, will be 21 in April. And as we've seen, you know, I just don't expect it. And if he's not, if he doesn't, I don't think he definitely doesn't have to. And there's going to be nothing wrong if he just plays double A and triple A. I mean, he's 21 years old.
He's 21 years old.
But in that same breath, by 2025, look out for this guy, because I definitely believe next year, if he does not make his MLB debut this year, we'll have a chance to earn a spot on the Braves opening day roster.
Yeah, potentially compete next spring training for the starting shortstop role with Orlando Arcia, possibly.
Yeah. Coming up after the break, Russell Wilson, that guy, Russ, let him cook, believes he can win two Super Bowls before he retires. Alex, I'll tell you one thing. Nobody ever said Russell Wilson lacks confidence on the I Am an Athlete podcast with Brandon Marshall. He goes on to say that he wants to win two Super Bowls over the next 5 years. Now, Russell Wilson is about to be 36 years old. I believe he's coming off two of the worst seasons of his career. The Broncos are willing to eat $39 million just to get him off the roster. But this guy still believes he can play. And, you know, we talked about in the opening segment, there is a world where a stopgap option like Russell Wilson, and you can get into the contract situation, makes sense for the Falcons.
Yeah, let me preface the contract with, let's, quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3. Falcons don't love J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix, Bo Nix, Spencer Rattler, whoever else you love, Michael Pratt. They don't love any of those guys. The options are, and Steve Wyche, you know, believes Justin Fields trade is not going to be on the Falcons radar for what we can get into that a different time. Your options get dwindle very fast. Baker Mayfield re-signs with the Bucks, he's out. Kirk Cousins re-signs with the Vikings, he's out. What are your options? I mean, there are not a lot. And Russell Wilson, the biggest facet of his, like, or the most attractive part of his free agency is the contract situation. As Chase mentioned, whether he plays for the Broncos, whether he's fishing in Miami, whether he's at a futures conference, whatever he does, he's getting $39 million no matter what. So he has absolutely no incentive to go to another team in free agency and kind of drive up the price and see who really wants me. Do you want to pay me $20 million? Do you want me that way? No. He wants to stick it to the Broncos. How I see it, I would want to stick it to the Broncos and take a league minimum deal. Now, listen, Russell Wilson in free agency isn't the most attractive guy. Like Chase said, he's 30, going to be 36 years old. He may have lost a step or two mobility. Obviously, the personality of like a politician rubs some people the wrong way. I think he's a total cheese ball in some circumstances.
Not lying.
But that guy for $1.5 or $2 million, give him to me every single day of the week if, obviously, the young quarterbacks don't actually pan out for the Falcons throughout their process.
Yeah, I mean, this is all prefaced on the fact that you're not going to land one of those top quarterbacks, and you don't like a guy like J.J. McCarthy.
Right.
I think, and even if you do like a guy like J.J. McCarthy, Russell Wilson for $1 million to sit and learn behind, probably a pretty damn good idea. And then you just talk about, I mean, $40 million with the salary cap rising up, to build around Russell Wilson and the roster that you already have. I mean, it's kind of tantalizing. I mean, even if you're talking about Kirk Cousins or Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins basically takes up your entire salary cap, all the cap that you have to move. Would I rather have Kirk Cousins for $40 million or Russell Wilson for $1 million and build a stacked roster around him? That even to me is a little more intriguing. Now, the question that I think with Russell Wilson, the only way I see him not taking a vet minimum deal is if someone's willing to put in like a second year. Now that's where things get interesting, because then he might say, oh, I want a 2-year contract over a 1-year contract. And I would be willing to give a little bit of slack to the Broncos, especially if it's backloaded and you can still kind of stick it to him. So I think that's the only intriguing aspect is, will there be a team out there willing to give him a 2-year deal? I don't think there will be.
I don't think there will be, because if you look at all the teams that need quarterbacks, you know, the Falcons, the Raiders, the Steelers, obviously the top three in the draft, Patriots, Commanders, Bears. I don't know if I mentioned the Giants, the Vikings. Not a lot. I mean, maybe the Raiders are the one team I could see potentially give Russell Wilson a multi-year deal, but they just saw how poorly that went with Jimmy G. I don't see it. So I don't think any team, I don't think the Falcons would be too keen on giving him a 2-year deal. Because the whole idea behind adding a guy like Russell Wilson is that we're going to kick the can of going all in on a quarterback, preferably through the draft. It's just going to go to the next class, the 2025 class, and we're going to kind of reassess, and hopefully we can find our quarterback of the future in the draft there. The whole idea of giving Russell Wilson a 2-year deal kind of nixes that. It's not the worst thing in the world, because maybe you want that rookie quarterback to sit a year. But if we're talking, you know, Kirk Cousins, $40 million, like you said, versus Russell Wilson for $1 million, but you have to have him for 2 years. I'm going to pay Kirk Cousins the money and still just draft a quarterback in 2025 or JJ McCarthy in 2024. I just think Russell Wilson, I don't like the guy, at least how he portrays himself in media. And I know that a lot of people in the locker room, in NFL locker rooms for a fact, feel the same way. Kirk Cousins feels like he's just a good old boy who just, you know, he's a little quirky, but he's one of the guys. Where Russell Wilson doesn't feel like that. And I don't want to mess up the locker room chemistry.
I also think that's a huge factor in even having this conversation about Russell Wilson, is that you talk about a culture that's been built that Terry Fontenot has emphasized. You talk about the guy that they hired in Raheem Morris that is all about that culture. Do they really want to bring in a guy like Russell Wilson, even for a veteran man? I think that's really the biggest talk.
You're probably right.
$1 million for Russell Wilson, probably one of the better options they have if they can't land one of the top quarterbacks. But if you don't like the guy, if you don't think he's going to vibe well with the guys that you bring in, then there's absolutely no point. The quarterback needs to be vibing with the entire team. It's probably the most important aspect of him, of anything. So I think that's probably the biggest sticking point against Russell Wilson to a lot of teams, not just the Atlanta Falcons. Coming up after the break, we're going to give our predictions a month away. Who will be the Braves' fifth starter in the rotation? Perhaps the most competitive battle this spring training for the Braves is for that final spot in the rotation. We saw Bryce Elder make his first start over the weekend on Sunday. Didn't look great. I don't put any weight in that. It's literally the first start of spring training. He's going to have 4 or 5 more before the start of the season, and it's really important. I mean, he was crap during last year. If you go look back last year, and then all of a sudden he makes an NL All-Star team through the first half of the season. I don't put too much weight into that, but a decision has to be made at the end of the season. Who's your prediction to get that fifth and final spot?
I think it'll be Ronaldo Lopez, and it's for one reason, one reason only, and it's just roster management, you know, with keeping as many guys in the system as possible, with guys who can still be optioned to Gwinnett and back and forth. So I think it'll be that. And I do think that eventually Ronaldo Lopez will make a more permanent move to the bullpen at some point through the season. And then it will be Bryce Elder in that fifth spot, who, you know, obviously, like you mentioned, he was not good last spring training. Second half of the season, he wasn't that good. He was great in the first half. Like always with anything, I think this is the most important thing baseball fans in particular should take away from this, is it's always somewhere in the middle. And Bryce Elder is going to be a pitcher that's somewhere in the middle of his second half and first half. He's not going to be a perennial all-star like some fans might hope, but he's not going to be as bad as he was in that second half. He's just going to learn to grow. It was a marathon of a season for him, unexpectedly forced into the rotation, and he held his own for the most part. So I think, you know, he's going to get some more time to kind of hone in his craft in AAA. And the fact of the matter is, there's going to be pitching injuries, guys. There's going to be pitching injuries. We're going to see Bryce Elder. We're going to see AJ Smith-Shaw. We're going to see Alan Wiggins, Hurston Waldrop. You know, I might get a start here or there. There's going to be the opening day roster isn't going to be the end all be all. It certainly won't be the postseason roster. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, it's going to be Ronaldo Lopez, barring something unforeseen, because they want to keep more of those relievers around. Not a lot of them have options. So that's a big reason. Also, if you're going to stretch out a guy to potentially be a starter, you're going to do it at the beginning of the season and then move him back. You're not going to go start him in the
bullpen
and then go the other way. So those are two big reasons for that. And the third and final reason, I think maybe even the most important, is the upside of Ronaldo Lopez.
Definitely.
If you can somehow get a guy that's humming at 98, 99 miles per hour and can strike out over 10 batters per nine, as much as I love Bryce Elder, my man, you're going to have to kick rocks, dude. If that guy can hone in his talent, his arm, his skill over 5 to 6 innings, that's something that you just cannot, as much as you love Bryce Elder, and you know
$13 million too.
Yeah. As much as I love you, my guy, you're going to have to kick rocks if that's the case. But, I think it's going to be Ronaldo Lopez, no doubt. That wraps up our show for this evening. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We'll be back on Tuesday.